Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into another episode of Leftovers Podcast. I'm Derek Kramer.
I'm Frank Arcuri.
And my girlfriend is not harassing your wife.
Well, that's also because...
That's because we're forever alone, but... But my girlfriend is not harassing your wife.
Yeah.
These are facts.
These are technical facts.
These are also literal facts.
They are literal facts.
So let's start, I mean...
Oof. What a way to start it.
I mean, I have to. I mean, you were the one that said, we got to talk about this. So let's do it. I mean, all right. So for those that don't know, the Ottawa Senators, in what has come into a case of, could this team get any worse? And somehow the answer became yes.
Yeah.
All right. Frank, please explain to the kind people what the hell is going on in Ottawa.
So
this coming after the whole... Senators assistant GM Randy Lee being arrested in Buffalo, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's a completely different topic.
I'm just saying this comes after this.
Yeah. So Erik Karlsson's wife has recently filed a restraint.
A restraining order?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Against Mike Hoffman's girlfriend. Karlsson's wife is accusing Hoffman's girlfriend of, to put it pretty simply, I would call it cyberbullying.
Right.
Pretty much, I think that's what you can simple it down to. Hoffman's girlfriend's been accused of making, you know, a lot of remarks about her, about Karlsson himself. Apparently, Karlsson's wife has said that she wished that Erik blew out his knee and his career was over.
Jesus.
Yeah. And she also made, and Hoffman's wife also made, was kind of like making fun of both of Erik and his wife about losing their son.
That's like,
we remember, you know, that was a real sad story for Erik Karlsson and his wife is, unborn baby was stillborn.
Oh my god!
And
yet, so this is being linked. Though this is the strangest part is that it's being linked to the now fiance of Mike Hoffman.
Is she the fiance or is she girlfriend? Because I've heard both. I've heard long time
girlfriend, and then some are saying fiance.
I don't know. I don't know which one it is. Obviously, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter because it's not good.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Apparently, this has been going on for a while.
Yes.
And the Senators have known about this. Derek's had to pause there.
Of course they would. Of course they would know about this. Of course they would know about this.
I don't know if that... See... Okay, I think of that, and I don't think it's as I don't think that part is as bad. To me, it coming out now kind of says that they've been trying to deal with it internally. Maybe that's the reason why they were trying to trade Hoffman.
That would be so. Look, man.
I don't know.
We
don't know what's going on. We obviously don't know what's going on with the management there. They're kind of, you know, all over the place, especially with the owner. But we also have to remember Ottawa was looking to pretty much almost trade everybody at some point during, especially towards the trade deadline. Mike Hoffman's name was up in those rumor mills. Winnipeg was a team that actively tried to get Hoffman, and there was a deal in place for them, but Hoffman said no. He didn't want to go to Winnipeg for some odd reason.
I mean, would you willingly want to go to Winnipeg?
with the season they had.
I mean, yeah, good point.
I mean, they were still one of the best teams in the league at the time.
Yes, yes.
But no, but even still, the fact that they were trying to trade Hoffman, and now that this is coming out, and it's been said that the Senators have known about it, and this has probably been going on for multiple years.
Now,
because
this makes sense now that Hoffman
other
is being...
players' wives have come out and also have said, I'm not surprised, because this has happened before. One in particular, Andrew Hammond's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And we remember what the kind of run that Hammond went on a couple years ago.
Yes.
With Ottawa. And he was part of the Duchesne trade. So you have to. He was gone at the early this year. So that means it has been going on for multiple years.
But now this makes sense as to why a player who's been, you know, getting 50 points per season at least over the last 4 years is being considered for a trade.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the biggest thing is his contract. Does have the modified no-trade clause, which is why he vetoed that deal to Winnipeg.
Yep.
$5.187 million over the next two seasons now.
I mean, no matter what, he's a great player.
Yes.
He's a heck of a player. I'd love to have him on the Sabres.
Now, my problem is this. Look, you may love someone and everything like that, and this also can harken back to a lesser extent to the Brian Colangelo thing.
Yeah.
And in another aspect, Brent Grimes. His wife is someone that always seems to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Listen, do not jeopardize someone's career, especially if you're married to them or marrying them.
Yeah.
I know that a husband has got to go to bat for his wife.
Yeah.
You know, that's just got to, like... Otherwise, well, what the hell are you married for?
Yeah.
Because you'd do anything for that person.
And, yeah, that's...
However, when they screw you over like this, there's got to be a talk.
A big talk.
Because...
A long talk.
Look, man, I hate it when I date someone and they say, oh, you can't talk to this one friend that happens to be a girl of yours. No, step off.
It's true.
That's what, like, if you're talking about one of my close friends and I'm not allowed to talk to that person, well, guess what? Peace out.
Yeah. Yeah,
and now you're going, but for this kind of destructive behavior of talking about the stillborn child.
Talking about
a teammate.
Talking about ending the same teammate's career.
It just it boggles the mind to think how truly disgusting some people really can be.
Yeah.
And yes, I should sound less naive. But at the same time, it's still baffling.
Yeah.
It's still something that perplexes me to no end. Because,
yeah,
again, who would have thought basic human decency would be the focal point of what's going on here? What?
Yeah. It's true. And, you know, Hoffman's in a really bad pickle now. Because, one, we don't know if he was involved in it. Because there's some saying that he could have been involved with it himself. And you hope to God he wasn't.
Yes, I would at least like one less crappy person here.
Yeah. Yeah. And... The real thing is now people are going to wonder, is he going to break up with her? Because if he breaks up with her, then you know that, well, okay, he did the right thing. He got this really bad person out of his life. But if he plans, if they are engaged and they do plan on getting married, and he does plan on staying, or he does plan on staying with her anyway. Even if he goes to another team, those players on the other team are going to have real big trust issues with Hoffman.
Yeah. Look, this whole thing to me speaks bizarre, terrible, and almost unnecessary, you would think.
Yeah.
To have to even be able to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because again, you would think people, especially the wife of a player that happens to be a teammate.
The captain of the team.
Yes. Let's throw that part in there, why don't we? You would think. Like, even if you're a terrible person, can you at least be smarter than that? I guess the answer's no.
No, the answer's always no.
Like I said, I say stupid things. I kind of make that a thing here on this podcast. Thanks for listening, by the way. But are you freaking kidding me? Like, and this is all alleged, by the way.
Yeah, this is all alleged, too. So but I think the part that really kind of makes it true is the fact that
there's being an investigation. There's
not even that. The fact that multiple players' wives have come out to say and said that this happens. Not just if it was just Carlson's wife.
Then there's a
50-50. But it's leaning towards that this is real. This is a real thing. When you got other player. When you got there's at least two other players whose wives have said that Hoffman's girlfriend has done this. One of whom is not on the team anymore because Hammond got traded. Because Hammond's wife is on Twitter and she quoted the original article for it. I think it was from Ottawa Sun, I believe, and said, "I'm totally not surprised because she's done this before. Like she did it to Hammond.
It's disgusting.
It's very disgusting.
And again, listen.
I feel really bad for Mike Hoffman." I feel really bad for him.
I will if
as long as he is not a part of it. As if the reports come out later that he had nothing to do with all of it, then I will continue to feel really bad for him because he's in a really bad situation.
I agree with that.
But right now I'm going to feel bad for him because he's in a bad situation, but if he was a part of it, that's all going to go away real quickly.
Well,
and he's going to – I wouldn't be surprised if he faces disciplinary action from the league.
I won't – ready?
And I think he should.
I'm a bit looser on this with my feeling bad for him thing. The only way I'll feel bad for him is if he does happen to end up leaving this woman. Because I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry, but you're allegedly dating a crazy a-hole person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you're gonna marry that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not anymore.
Yeah, that would slow things down there a little bit, I would
hope.
Yeah. That is where I would feel bad for Mike Hoffman.
Yeah.
If he continues to stand by her, well, you know what? You made your choice. You're digging your grave, son. That's what I'd say.
And as of right now, he is standing by her. But we're still really early in this. So
I know.
We can't. There's real. You can't really.
I know.
You can't really do much right now.
However, right, here it is. Hoffman denying the allegations. There is a 150% chance that my fiance Monica and I are not involved in any of the accusations that have been pursued coming our way. We totally understand that there is no place for cyberbullying. He uses 150% twice, actually, in the statement that he gave.
Yeah.
To the Ottawa Citizen.
Ottawa Citizen, that's what it was. Yeah.
To think that this team came one overtime goal away from the Stanley Cup last year.
2 years ago, yeah.
No, not last year, 2 years ago. Yeah. Wait.
Well.
It is last year. It was a year ago from now.
Yeah. You can say last
year. It was
year.
A year ago from now.
Yeah. I don't know, the season's over. The mind's jumbled.
They would have gotten torn up by Nashville. All right, you want to go to something happier?
Sure.
Ovechkin slow danced with the Stanley Cup last night.
I love it.
On an empty dance floor.
He can do whatever he wants.
He is slow dancing.
It's great.
Oh, my God.
It's great.
This is the bender to end all benders.
It's the summer of Ovi.
It's the bender to end all benders.
The greatest
Ovi
thing ever.
Ovi is putting every... Oh, my God.
Who would have thought that Ovechkin winning the Stanley Cup was going to be the greatest thing ever for hockey?
I mean, I did. Ovechkin was already a very good personality.
Did you expect this? All this with the celebrations afterwards.
Yeah, there was TJ Oshie drinking a beer through his jersey. There was Evgeny Kuznetsov getting the first swear of the day at the parade.
Yeah.
And then Ovechkin followed up shortly thereafter. We're not going to be bleeping suck this year.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I know he always has spoken in some broken English, but that was great.
It was fantastic.
We're not going to be suck this year. That makes enough sense to me. Now, Ovechkin, however, will. He finally had to relinquish the cup, though.
Yeah.
He finally had to let it go. It was not by his side for 24 hours. They held the parade yesterday, and now the cup goes back to the keeper, and now each player gets their day with the cup in a little bit.
Yep.
So, just love it. In his final moments with his beloved trophy, alone on the dance floor, he shared one last slow dance with the cup.
Oh, that means his day with the cup comes.
He's
going to
have the biggest hangover of all time.
It's going to be the biggest party.
Well, I'm talking like today.
Oh,
today's
yeah.
Today's got to be the biggest hangover of his life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it always is for hockey players at this time. It's incredible.
Alex Ovechkin has always been a personality.
Oh yeah.
Fun loving on the ice. Like the way he would celebrate reminded you of Brett Favre when he threw touchdowns.
Yeah.
Every time it was a good time. And now you're seeing one of the more jovial players of the NHL, someone that doesn't give you the typical player speak all the time, giving you the celebrations that are there for you.
Yeah.
I love it. And there needs to be more personality in sports. It really does. Coach speak, boring. Give me people that have some personality.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, I may not like Kevin Durant necessarily for what he's done, but guess what? When he says it's not his job to make sure the NBA is running legitimately, it's not his job to focus on making sure there's competitive balance in the league. Guess what? He's right. I don't like him for it, but he's right.
He is.
And again, the league could step in and say, all right, you guys are getting a little ridiculous here. Or they could put stingier salary cap hits on there. You know, there's ways around it. However, again, at the end of the day, be honest. Josh Rosen. People don't like Josh Rosen. Why? He speaks his mind. Oh, no. Crap.
Oh, no.
Look, man, if you want Sean McDermott talk all day, we can give you that here, especially on WGR550.com. And again, McDermott seems to be an okay coach. However, the coach speak kind of gets to me sometimes. I'm not a person that likes the mundane, the boring, the safe answers. And Josh Rosen had said it. When he basically said to these words, when we give you player speak or coach speak, you don't like that. But when I give you something honest and a real opinion, a real talk, you don't like that either.
Yeah.
Guess what? I'm not of the latter. I will always appreciate someone having the stones to say what they want to say.
Yeah.
And while I may not necessarily agree with some things that are said, I'm not going to hate them because they said it.
You know what it reminds me of? We don't have to talk about it. But this whole topic, too, relates to O'Reilly.
Yes. And we will talk about him. And I think there's no better transition than that.
Okay. Sure.
We're what, 9 days away? Nine days from the first round of the NHL draft.
9 days.
9 days to the Darlene.
To Darlene is a Saber.
But more importantly, 9 days to general managers being on the floor together.
Yeah.
That's where deals get done.
It is.
And this is where the Ryan O'Reilly speculation gets ramped up to 15. We don't turn it up to 11. We turn it up to 15 here, man.
Yeah.
Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, in the coach speak thing while we transition this, I mean, Ryan O'Reilly says the same thing constantly.
Yeah.
And look, man.
He finally said something that wasn't that. It's the same thing. He was always saying the same stuff, and we were like, this is so boring.
Yeah.
He's always saying the same things.
I have to be better.
And now he comes, and then at the end of the year, he comes out and says all of that. With the, you know, yes, lost love for the game, whatever. He says all of that. He was being completely honest, and we still hate him for it.
I don't hate him for that.
Well, most people do.
And my reasoning behind trading Ryan O'Reilly has more to do with hockey reasons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And but the speculation started to come around because of that, because of what he said. Because a lot of media people who didn't like it was saying the Sabres have to trade O'Reilly because of it.
And here's my thing. It proves that athletes are humans.
Dude. Yeah. People forget that.
You lose so many games at the start of season, of course it's going to take a toll on your head.
Yeah.
Especially if you're the kind of person like O'Reilly who tends to beat himself up in the media.
Yeah.
When you start saying something enough, well, you start to believe it. And when the losing happens, it combines that thought and it kind of makes it worse. He still produced, but he still thought that he could do better. However.
Yeah, he still produced.
However. Someone needs to remind him that, well, what he did was more or less his career average based on point production. Yep. Not a surprise. Does he think that he can do better? Probably. Of course you do.
Hey, you always think he can do better. If he thinks he can do better and he's going to work hard towards it, that's all. That's what matters. But if you're going to tell me that you're going to pay $7.5 million for a guy who's going to win you a lot of faceoffs, can play in almost any situation, offensive zone, defensive, the neutral zone. You know, he's the guy. He's your go-to faceoff guys for key faceoffs, like especially ones at like the end of the game. And he could get you 60 points.
And that's been
why are you trading that just because of those comments?
Just because of those comments would be irresponsible.
Yes, very irresponsible.
And my reason I always bring it up is this. Ryan O'Reilly is not what the Sabres want to build towards with speed.
That's fair.
That is why I suspect he will be dealt.
And that's fair.
Because A, he doesn't fit the Sabres' mold for what they want to build right now with what Jason Botchel and Phil Housley want to do. Whether they see the end of this tenure or not is going to be something we have to wait and see. However, it's second year for these guys. They're not going anywhere right away. But here's the second part of this. Ryan O'Reilly still holds value in the NHL.
A lot.
If you can get me that Mike Richards type deal that Botchel's looking for.
Yeah, you take it.
Send it.
Yeah.
Full send. Get O'Reilly on the fastest plane possible and give me all the stuff. That's the only way that you logically do it, and that's the only way I think Jason Botchel does it. He's not handing a center over for anything less than he wants.
Yeah. That's why there's with the talk about Carolina really doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And actually,
unless you're getting the only reason it doesn't make a lot of sense to me is if Carolina is willing to trade Noah Hanifin, who is an RFA, who, yes, is Eichel's age, very young. He was, I think, fifth overall in 2015. If they're willing to trade that, don't you think there's something wrong with him?
Yeah.
If Carolina wants to trade him?
Well, in the NHL.
I know that they have to. If they want Ryan O'Reilly, they got to give something up to do it. I understand.
If Buffalo wants something, they're going to have to give something up. That would be Ryan O'Reilly.
Absolutely.
If Carolina wants to get something, they're going to have to give something up. As a matter of fact, Mike Maniscalco, Fox Sports Carolina. He was on with Howard and Jeremy yesterday.
Okay.
You can find that on demand.
Yeah.
He had said that same thing, that Carolina and Ryan O'Reilly doesn't make sense. There's less on the rumors of O'Reilly and Carolina now, which makes me suspect something, Frank. If the Sabres are going to trade with Carolina, it's for Justin Falk. or it's for Jeff Skinner. Which means...
But my biggest...
If they trade for Skinner, that means O'Reilly is on the outs somewhere else, I think.
But here's the other thing. We know what Batra wants for O'Reilly. It's a Mike Richards kind of deal. So that means a young NHL player, a prospect, a good prospect who had been recently drafted probably at worst 2 years ago and at least a second round pick. Because that's what the Richards deal was when he went to L.A. Carolina has been reported to want a prospect and a first-round pick for Jeff Skinner. Not for Justin Falk, but for Jeff Skinner. So
Falk,
that's why. Think. So yeah, that's another. So that's another reason why I don't think O'Reilly. It's not going to make a lot of sense. My other issue too. How desperate do the Sabres need to trade for a defenseman?
They don't.
Exactly. They don't. Because you have Ristolainen. You have Scandella. You have Jake McCabe coming back. You're expecting Brendan Gulley and Casey Nelson to both make the team next year. And you're drafting Dahlin. Number one.
There have been discussions about Jake McCabe or Zach Bogosian possibly being dealt.
And that's understandable. But then
you still have... So why the heck do we need to add a defenseman is what you're saying, and I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, because after Bogosian, you still got Nathan Beaulieu. I'm willing to give him another year.
Yes.
And you signed Lawrence Pilut.
Yep.
Who I think is a dark horse to make this team.
Nelson could end up being a seventh defenseman.
Yeah. It may very well be.
Now,
so to me, why do you have to trade for a defenseman?
That's why I suspect if they are going to deal with Carolina, it might be for Justin Falk, and then they trade Ristolainen for something else.
See, I don't know.
That's the only reason I think
that's the I think done I think with you're Carolina. Right. I think you're right in that. That's the only reason you could see that happening.
Yes, that's the only reason a deal with Carolina gets done at this point.
I think so.
If they come back with Justin Falk, not necessarily Jeff Skinner.
I do agree. I think that's what it would be. I don't think it happens because I would suspect they want to give Ristolainen another year, especially with Dahlin, and see if Dahlin can strengthen Ristolainen.
Yes. I suspect that you're more in play for Montreal. That's a team,
yeah.
That's a team that really, I think, stands out to the Sabres because you can get a player, a young player.
Like an Alex Galchenyuk.
And then get a prospect.
Like Ryan Poehling.
And a second round pick because
They have four of them.
That's a pretty easy way to look at things.
Yes.
And while it was a different regime, the Sabres did take a chance on the personality of Evander Kane. And for the most part, it checked out.
Yeah.
Save for that one offseason where Kane did a dumb thing.
Well, yeah.
But he cleaned it up after that immediately. And that is to his credit.
Yep.
And now he's been rewarded for it.
Yes.
I think Galchenyuk, a lot of what's going on is he's being pushed out of Montreal.
Oh, that's been apparent for a couple of years now.
And I'm not sure how much of the rumors around him off the ice are true.
Yeah.
Sometimes where there is smoke, there is fire.
This is true. So, I love Alex Galchenyuk. I think he's a great player. I think he should be a center. I watched him play center when he was in the juniors. I watched him play center during that 2013 U.S. junior team that won gold.
Think about it.
He was their top center. He looked really good. And he was drafted as a center by Montreal. But at some point, they decided to move him to wing, which is fair, okay. But then they started to play him on the fourth line.
In five seasons, including those stints on the fourth line, where they keep jerking him around and not putting him in a set line or with set line mates. 31 points his rookie year. 46, 56, 44, 51.
Well, 27 points his rookie year, actually. Because he played the
shortened He played the shortened season. I forgot
still
about
still solid. 31 points, 60 in 65 games, second year. Okay, I mean, that was his first full year in the NHL. You know, you got to...
But then, again, 46, 56, 44, 51.
I mean, he had 30 goals in 15-16. And that was the year that... And Carey Price didn't even play most of the year because he was hurt. And Montreal was really bad the whole year. And he still scored 30 goals.
Yes.
And he scored 40, and then 44 points, yeah. And then 51 points last year, 19 goals. I mean, even playing the amount of minutes he did, he was still getting points.
Exactly. It's the fact that he wasn't playing all of those minutes.
I wonder how much of that was on the power play. Because I'm pretty sure he played power play. So that's what I want to know.
Well, let's take a look. I mean, Galchenyuk is a guy who he really does seem to offensive zone start percentage, by the way, 55% for last season, where he ended up with 51 points. But his ice time never eclipsed anything more than 16:26, and that was his 30-goal season. The reason Montreal may not be seeing him as a center, though, is that he has always been a sub-50%er at the dot.
Yeah, but it's not as bad. I mean, besides his true rookie, his first full NHL season, which he only played 65 games, his faceoffs was really bad at 33%. Everything else has been in the 40s. 42, you know, a couple 42%, 45% last season, 47% in 15-16, and 14-15, 49%.
By the way, last year on the power...
Actually, that's a lot better than people think.
On the power play, by the way, he had 9 goals and 15 assists.
So 24 points.
On his 51.
So that's 27...
Of his 51.
That's 27, but that was 5-on-5.
Yes.
And then season prior was 15 power play points out of the 44, and then 16 the year before out of the 56. And that looks like 12.
That was a career high, by the way, on power play.
Yeah, points. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And a career low in shooting percentage by a lot.
Yeah.
He was at an 8.9.
And remember, that team was really bad. I think that's worth it.
I think it's worth it, absolutely. It's worth it. Especially if his value is not perceived to be high by Montreal. You can easily turn that around.
But now my question is, do they see him as a center? Or do they see him as a winger?
And that would be tricky to look at.
And that I think that would affect... And if this trade does happen before free agency, that greatly affects what the Sabres will do come July 1st.
Even strength, Galchenyuk has been fine.
Oh, yeah.
You look at it and...
But what I'm saying, though, is...
108 goals, 78 of them are even strength. Only 30 are on the power play.
That's pretty good.
It's a really nice percentage of doing both.
Yeah.
147 assists, 100 of them, even strength.
Yeah.
So, again, you're looking at a guy who he can really be someone that can give you a lot. And I think that Galchenyuk, again, is perceived at a lower value. So could you even ask for something higher from Montreal? Because if you're Buffalo, you could strong arm here. Mark Bergevin ain't necessarily what I'd call smart.
So maybe you go Galchenyuk, Paling, a second, and another guy?
Maybe just another second. Throw in more picks.
2 seconds?
Yeah, why not?
Or a second and third? You could do that. I think so.
You can get more out of this deal because of how Montreal perceives Galchenyuk.
Yeah.
And I think that there's really there's a lot more to Montreal with O'Reilly than you'd hear from Carolina or from Vancouver. Vancouver, as a matter of fact, came up yesterday. Elliot Friedman had spoken in Vancouver about any sort of deal being made there, and it's been said that Vancouver was not offering their first-round pick at all for Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised. Plus, I mean, with the teams that we're talking about, you know, with Carolina, with Montreal, with Vancouver, O'Reilly's been talking about losing has become accepting. If he goes to one of those teams, he's still going to be losing.
Yes. But at the same time, I think that there really is something to... There's something to a lot of what the Sabres are doing here. And here it was, the quote from Elliot Friedman. I know there's been rumblings that they offered the 7th overall pick for Ryan O'Reilly, this meaning Vancouver. From what I can gather, that is not true. They seem to be a little more aggressive on Noah Hanifin, though.
Okay.
Which is where you might get your deal for Jeff Skinner. If Skinner is someone that's been linked to the Sabres, say Vancouver trades Hanifin.
Trades for Hanifin.
And then next thing you know, well, maybe Carolina says, all right, we gave something up. Now we want to move on from Jeff Skinner, though, too. Now let's plug the hole that we just had because of the fact that we're planning on moving Jeff Skinner. Maybe that's why Hanifin's on the trading block. They might be doing this twofer kind of thing, trying to move on from the core that they have and carrying on with Sebastian Aho and Toivo Teravainen being their lead cogs in the machine.
Right.
I just don't understand Hanifin. Why?
From what I've read about Hanifin, his hockey sense is not great. So he doesn't really have good awareness on the ice.
Yes.
So all that right. Could be one of the reasons why they are interested in trading him. To which, once again, if I'm the Sabres, I wouldn't do it. I think that's someone you stay away from.
Yeah. I think there's a lot. For what you want for Ryan O'Reilly, Vancouver's a team I would stay away from.
I think so.
Montreal is one that I'm kind of leaning towards.
They're the most intriguing.
Yes. There's a lot more options, I think, with Montreal than anywhere else. And I remember at first I was like, eh. But I've been able to look at it more and more and think that Ryan O'Reilly with Montreal it makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, I'm more prone to being okay with trading Ryan O'Reilly.
I'm okay with it as long as it makes sense. As long as the trade makes sense, as long as you're getting something back that's continuing that plan of what you want, which we have to remember. What was the biggest thing Botrel has preached about how he wants to build this team?
Development. That was his buzzword.
Yes, development. What else, though? What else was it?
Using the AHL.
Well,
I'm missing something here.
Centers. You can never have too many of them.
I thought Tim Murray said that, but then again, it's a pretty shared thought in the NHL.
Well, no, this is definitely something Botrel said. He said he did say you build through your centers. Right now, Sabres have three really good ones.
Yes.
And a lot of people want to trade O'Reilly because they think he's going to be the third line center next season, and they don't want to pay a guy $7.5 million to play third line. That's another reason. Well, guess what? Fun fact, Ryan O'Reilly is your second line center. He's not your third line center. I know we have Casey Mittelstadt, but he's going to start the season on the third line.
Yes.
Playing the centers. If they see him as a center, which I think they do because he played center when he came up after the Minnesota season ended, and I would suspect he's going to play center come Def Camp, which is going to be really soon, actually.
Yeah.
You have a center core of Eichel, O'Reilly, Mittelstadt.
Yes.
You can plug anybody else for that fourth line.
Correct.
It could be Evan Rodriguez. It could be Zemgus Girgensons.
I think I'd rather it be Rodriguez. He seems to have a natural fit for center.
And
it
depends.
Gives you a
there's
little
a lot,
bit.
You know, there's a lot of depends on that. But yeah, I agree. So if you're trading Ryan O'Reilly, you would want, ideally, unless you're making another trade and getting a center back, you would want a guy who can replace him.
I'd want a guy
who could fill that spot.
And Alex Galchenyuk could.
And Alex Galchenyuk could. Ryan Poehling definitely could when he is ready. He's very good.
Montreal, and again, Marc Bergevin is a GM I can count on to make a mistake.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
That's true.
I'm sorry to say it, but I'm targeting a lot of these Canadian GMs right now because they tend to make the derp moves right now.
So that's why I'm very hesitant on trading O'Reilly unless you're getting a guy back who can fill his spots. Because I don't really see any other trades the Sabres are going to make. I don't think they're trading Ristolainen. Are they going to trade Leonard to get, you know, because they're going to move on from him? Probably, but you're not going to get much for him. You're probably only going to get at most a mid-round pick because he's a free, because he's a RFA. So you're just trading his rights.
Yeah.
But that's really it. I don't see him trading Ristolainen. I think if they do, that's going to be after next season. I do think they want to see what he can do with Dahlin. So trading O'Reilly, you would want to get a center back.
Yes. I agree. What about Edmonton? Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, a name that has been dangled around.
Yes, and I like the idea. I don't know if Edmonton is going to trade him. They seem to more be willing to trade Klefbom first.
This is a GM that traded Taylor Hall.
I know. But we've talked about this.
And they have interest in Ristolainen.
Yes, but their interest in Ristolainen includes trading Klefbom.
That was only a speculative idea. But again, they have shown. Tim Murray did say he was offered that trade.
I know.
Oh, God.
Taylor Hall. Awesome. I know.
Especially knowing that we would have ended up winning the draft lottery. Oh, Taylor Hall would be amazing.
Yes, I know.
Oh, my God.
But you and me have a friend who writes for the Oilers. He writes for SB Nation Copper and Blue.
Yes.
He's the head guy there, actually. I think he's a head editor. I've talked to him about this. He said, if Edmonton is trading a player, one player this offseason, it's Oscar Klefbom. It's nobody else. No one else.
For a team that needs more defense, trading one of their better defenders is...
Their best defenseman is very counterproductive, yes. But that is what I've been told. That is what he has said.
Keep ruining Connor McDavid's career, guys.
I'd love to get Nugent Hopkins. And if you don't get a center back for Ryan O'Reilly and you do trade Ristolainen and you get Nugent Hopkins back, I wouldn't complain.
Right.
I would not complain one bit. But I think Edmonton wants to move Nugent Hopkins to wing and play him with McDavid. Because that did have success at the end of last season. So I would suspect that Klefbom does get moved in the offseason at some point, probably. And if they are trading Nugent Hopkins, it's same thing like after next year. Because they probably want to give him a year with McDavid and see what Nugent Hopkins can do. Because then I think they want to I think they're going to have Draisaitl play second line center.
Right. Now, Josh Allen. We're just making the hard transition here. Josh Allen has been in minicamp taking some reps with the ones.
Yeah, I think he's doing it right now, actually.
He's doing it right now, and everything I'm seeing on the Twitter is he's doing it good.
Yeah. So, Nate Peterman was doing really well yesterday, too.
Yes. I don't know how much I take into this in the minicamp. However, there's one thing I am taking into this, and it's the fact that they're trying to give Allen some reps with these number ones to get some chemistry with them so that I think that during the preseason he will play with them and see what he can do.
Yeah.
This is as open a competition as it's going to be, but they're still trying to protect him.
Yeah.
For the most part. However, this does tell me that, you know, they're not going to just go ahead and truly sit him unless they think that they need to. They want to see what he can do with the ones. And when the pads go live, that's when things are going to get real.
Yeah. Yeah. When training camp actually starts, that's when it preseason, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he got the first preseason game and got the action with the ones. Just, you know, you want to protect him, but in the preseason, let him play. Let him play with the ones if you want to see what he can do. You know, give him the time. Give him, the more he plays, the better his development is. So you want Allen to play as much as he can, especially game action. That's how he's going to develop, is through the game action. The more he does it, I think the better it will be. You know, it could be with the ones. It can even be with the twos. But just as long as he's playing.
So, if he had to invest some stock in the Who's Dak, who are you putting in there? Who are you putting all your stock in the Who's Dak? I'm not going to put all my stock in any one player.
No.
However, call me crazy, I'm going to put some stock into Nathan Peterman.
He's been looking good so far.
And again, bullets go live.
Yeah.
In late July.
Yeah.
But this coaching staff, they like him.
Yeah. They liked him enough to draft him.
This could be. I don't know. I really have no idea who to put all my stock into. But we'll see what happens.
I would probably lean towards McCarron more, because I still think it's his job to lose.
Mm-hmm.
But if Peterman wins it, good for him.
Yes.
And if Allen wins it, good for him.
Now, my biggest question is this. The wide receiver core, Robert Foster, undrafted rookie, getting first team reps yesterday at minicamp, kind of shows that the Bills really are one injury away from having a shambles of a wide receiver core.
Yeah.
And that one injury being to Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah.
If Benjamin goes down again, you're looking at a barren wasteland at wide receiver.
Yeah.
No offense to all those players.
No offense. Yeah, but they're not.
Nate Geary brought it up on Sports Talk Saturday, this past Saturday, and basically to the point of the receivers in the AFC East as a whole, not great.
This is true.
To which Joe then looked into it more and thought, and you know, he went team by team with this. Because Nate went and compared the Bills and Patriots receiving cores. Because Edelman is going to be suspended for 4 games. Well, the Patriots wide receivers, that's the big point, wide receivers. The wide receivers for New England don't look that great.
Yeah.
Yes, they have a Gronk and they have a Brady, but they're not the wide receivers.
Yeah, you could argue that Gronk is the best receiver in the AFC East.
He's a tight end, though. He's not a receiver.
But he's a guy who catches the ball.
He's the best pass catcher in the AFC East.
You can say that, yeah. That's also not a running back.
Yes. But I'm saying he's the best pass catcher. I would even just say that point blank.
Yeah.
But he's not a receiver. And the receiving core, even in New England, doesn't look great. Miami's, they traded Jarvis Landry. Doesn't look great. Jets, Robbie Anderson's all right.
Didn't he get arrested?
He did. And then the Bills.
Yeah.
A Kelvin Benjamin injury away from, well, not doing good things.
Kelvin Benjamin might be the best receiver.
I would agree with this. Even with Edelman back, I think Kelvin Benjamin's the best receiver of the AFC East. Gronk's still the best pass catcher.
Yes.
But I think Benjamin's the best wide receiver. I think, though, that there's a real problem at this position. And it really does bring back a lot to what Carolina has done over the past several years. Funny how the name of Kelvin Benjamin is still from there, too.
Yep.
But you saw a team in Carolina over these past several years. They don't really have that. After Steve Smith left, they didn't have that bona fide wide receiver anymore. Cam Newton seems to still get it done.
Yeah.
So maybe Cam Newton's actually really good, people.
Yeah.
So Cam Newton still gets it done despite no help at wide receiver. Next to no help at wide receiver.
Yeah.
Hell, he lost Kelvin Benjamin for an entire year. And he made the Super Bowl.
He won MVP.
Yeah, he won NFL MVP. And he went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if Benjamin gets hurt, the Bills really do have kind of a little bit of a disaster, especially if Zay Jones is not fully healthy for training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Or for the regular season. It just goes to show how fragile the core is. Maybe they find something in Robert Foster or Austin Prohl or Ray McLeod. Or maybe Rod Streeter can have a random good year or Jeremy Curley. Am I banking on that, though? No.
Or even Andre Holmes.
I can't bank on that. No, Andre Holmes led the team in touchdown receptions last year.
Yeah. To me, it just still says that this is what they were going for, in a way.
Yeah,
they're going very similar to the Eagles approach when they drafted Wentz. You know, who are the Eagles' best receivers in Wentz's rookie year? Jordan Matthews?
Dude. Well, Jordan Matthews, I suspected, was going to be better, but he ended up getting hurt the first snap at training camp.
Yeah.
And, oh, so Jordan Matthews might actually be a nice step up with the Patriots. Dang it. Andre Holmes led the team in touchdown receptions. I want you to guess how many touchdown catches Andre Holmes had. And this is the leader. You're high.
It's not by much, is it?
Not by much.
Four.
Really? No, it wasn't four either, Frank.
What's it even four?
The leader on the Bills in touchdown receptions for the entire season was three with Andre Holmes. 13 catches. Three of them were in the end zone.
One of them was off Zay Jones' hands.
Yes. Jones, by the way, had two. He also had 27 catches on 74 targets.
Yeah.
A horrible percentage.
Yeah.
And part of that has to do with the fact that he had some shoulder damage last year.
Yeah. But it tells me that this is, because if they really were trying to build for this year, they would have addressed the receiver core. They did build for this year on the defense. But Brandon Bean knows the cap situation for next year and is going to take advantage of that to build the offense.
I think the only thing that's more impressive, though, than how the Bills made the playoffs despite this receiving total from last year in the passing game, Charles Clay led the way in yards with 558. LeSean McCoy was second in 448.
Yeah.
Bills receiver Nick O'Leary was fourth on the team in receiving yards, dude. At 322.
They did.
Guess who was the leading receiver in yards at 430?
Deontay Thompson.
It was.
Yeah.
Cut and then signed back.
Yep.
Actually cut a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And then released by the Bears and brought in by the Bills.
Yeah. I would have liked to see them re-sign Thompson.
Yes.
But whatever. So, but like I said, go back. So, what was the Eagles' receiving core in Wentz's rookie year? Jordan Matthews.
Aguilar.
Nelson Aguilar.
Who had a very bad rookie year.
Yes.
So, there's hope for Zay Jones. People.
Who else?
There's hope for Zay Jones.
Who else? Not much else, right?
I'm just trying to think. Now I'm going to need to look.
Look it up real quick.
All right. So the Eagles wide receivers, you're looking at 2016, right?
Yes.
Okay. Doriel Green Beckham. Oh, God. I forgot they did that. That was so dumb. Yeah. It looks like it was Aguilar, Matthews, and not much else after that.
Yeah.
And ready?
Does this not scream very similar to what the Bills are doing?
There is one difference. They at least had two players get over 800 yards.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
As a matter of fact, Doriel Green Beckham, his yardage totals, and Nelson Aguilar, no less, actually. Their receiving totals, fourth and fifth on that team, by the way, would have been the Bills' leading wide receiver. They still would have been beaten by McCoy and Charles Clay.
But besides the actual stats, look at their receiving core the following season. Because they had a ton of cap space to use, and they were able to build an offense. With now, second year, Carson Wentz.
Yep.
Yeah, Nelson Aguilar. Alshon Jeffrey. Torrey Smith. Who's your top three?
Yep.
It's a pretty good top three. And
it does help that Aguilar took a step up.
Yeah, it did.
That's
oh, yeah.
the big thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That there needs to be development. And I think that if Zay Jones can take that step and catch a little more than 27 catches on 74 throws,
yeah,
which I believe is a pretty easy thing to do. You know, I believe in Zay Jones. I think he's going to be fine.
But it tells me that that's what they're going for. They want they built their defense. The defense is basically where is in almost in the picture of where they want it to be. They got that done. That's almost set. Now, with the cap space that they have this offseason, as long as Allen is taking those steps up, you're going to see the Bills.
With a lot of cap. No dead cap in 2019.
Exactly. Sign players for the offense to completely build around Allen.
Yes.
You're going to see a lot of better receivers.
I know, but I'm looking more at the Carolina model where they've just never decided on having that speedy wide receiver that can hug all the targets. And it still works for Carolina because they don't have to tie their cap into that. Because if you have a great quarterback, well, you don't need to be pressuring yourself to get wide receivers that are bona fide superstars.
Right.
And if Josh Allen turns into that, that'd be great. I think that this team takes a step back this year. I do.
Oh, I do too.
Because they went 6-2 in one score games.
We also, I mean, yeah,
that's
you
a
know,
tough metric to repeat.
We have to remember though, Sean McDermott did come from Carolina, so under the Ron Rivera coaching tree. Whose coaching tree is Ron Rivera come under? Andy Reid, along with Doug Peterson.
Yep.
So and there's going to be so you got to think there's going to be some similarities.
And McDermott worked in Philadelphia though too under Andy Reid. So
yep.
I would even just say that he's more direct than the Ron Rivera hire.
Yeah.
You know.
And
my thing is this:
when was McDermott in Philly?
It was for a bit.
I know it was for a bit.
Yeah, Sean McDermott was there back in 1998.
He was, and then he was there
until
he was there in 2007 until 2010 as well.
2011, that was when McDermott.
And guess what? Peterson was there too.
Yeah. No, he was, I'd say he was an Andy Reid disciple. I didn't even need the Ron Rivera part.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I'm just pointing out, like, I'm pointing out that they all come from the same coaching tree, which is Andy Reid. So I would suspect with what Peterson has done in Philly, McDermott, who knows Peterson, can think we can do that too.
Yes. And again, I think though that there's he did take a lot from his coaching staffs and everything from the time there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm not worried necessarily about the wide receivers going forward. They'll have their plan. I'm just saying this year, if Josh Allen's got to get in there with an offensive line that I'm not sold on and a wide receiver core that I'm also not sold on, especially if there's an injury to Kelvin Benjamin, maybe it's best that you put him in the in the lockbox and just keep him away from the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. It's a little interesting to go ahead and look at this and think.
It is. It is. But it's just based on the moves that they've made, it just that's kind of what it tells me that's the direction they're looking at.
Yeah.
They're not looking at this year, but they're going to do everything they can this year.
Yes.
Just like last year. Last year they had, you know, you got lucky to make the playoffs. This year they're going to continue to build. They're going to build off that. They're going to, you know, you got Tremaine Edmonds. Your secondary looks just as good as last year, if not better.
That's true. A
second year of Tre'Davious White, the year two of Hyde and Poyer together, and you got Vontae Davis on a one-year prove-it deal who's going to give it his all every game.
I mean, E.J. Gaines was fine, though, too.
And E.J. Gaines was fine,
his problem when he was out there. The problem was he wasn't available all the time.
But your depth is there as well. Your front four and the depth.
Taron Johnson, really, by the way, good. Is looking like a sneaky candidate for that third corner position.
Yeah. But you're building that defense, and it's pretty much set for now and for the future.
Last year there was no safety depth, and you have safety depth now.
Yes.
Behind Hoyer Poyer and Hyde.
Yep.
And you know, Raphael Bush is a solid depth safety. Saron Neal seems to be opening some eyes early on.
Yep.
And looks like a promising prospect in that regard as well. So, yeah, the defense looks fine to me. I'd rather they not have an injury at linebacker, particularly in the middle of the Tremaine Edmonds.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Matt Milano getting hurt would be a bit of a problem for me.
Yeah.
Same with Lorenzo Alexander.
Oh, absolutely. And you can say that with anybody.
I know, but the depth at linebacker is not the same as it is at the defensive line or at the secondary.
True. That's very true. And that's very true. But
so let's not get Kelvin Benjamin hurt or any of the linebackers. Let's protect all those guys this year, guys.
But the point, like, they knew what they had on the defense, and they knew that they could build something with it, and they've done it. And it's looking good for now. And it can look good for the future. Now, you go through this year, I would suspect that they don't expect to make the playoffs. So I expect they're probably going to 6-10, 7-9 seems very realistic for this Bills team.
Careful, Frank. You might get a lot of unexpected hate for saying that.
It's true. I know.
I'm not saying they're going to go 2-14 or 4-12.
Yeah, exactly.
But if it happens, it happens.
But you look towards next year. That cap space.
None of them cap penalties.
And think, I can build whatever I want.
Yes.
And I think that's what they're going for.
Yes, I agree. I think that, again, this season's going to be, you got to take it as it goes.
Yeah.
If they don't make the playoffs, they don't make the playoffs. If they're not good enough, they're not good enough this year. Because for the third year in a row, we're going to be looking at a Bills team that is far different from the one that we had the year previous.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, is that there's been a lot of roster turnover with this group, but they're seeming to be able to put the pieces together in order to make it work.
Yeah.
And a lot of those big contracts come off the books next year.
Yep.
Expect that this is Kyle Williams' last season.
Yes.
There's no cap penalty on Eric Wood anymore if that happens.
Yep.
There's no cap penalty on any player anymore next year for the Buffalo Bills. They're eating their medicine right now. It doesn't taste good, but it's going to make them better.
Yep.
Next year. This year, I'm just going to take it as it goes. Whatever happens, happens. If they end up 4-12, they end up 4-12. Who cares?
Just look for the positives.
Look for the positives in all of it. Because, trust me, in a year like that, it's not going to be easy. But guess what? Playoff monkey's off the back.
It is.
That's good news.
It is. That bought this regime a lot of time to build the, to do with whatever they need.
I don't know about a lot of time, but it definitely bought them some time. It bought them extra time.
It did buy them, yeah. Well,
because if it was still going on, there'd be more pressure this year.
Yeah, well, exactly.
But it's not. It's done. We don't have to talk about the longest playoff drought in the NFL.
Yep, it's over.
That part's over.
Yeah.
What we do need to talk about, though, is, well, what direction are you guys heading in?
Yeah.
Show me a clear plan. And they're showing it. They're they're looking probably toward next year being when they really start becoming a problem for other teams.
Yeah, I think so too. And you could say the same thing about the Sabres. You really can.
Sabres are the ones that, I mean, both teams still need work on their rosters.
Yeah, oh, big time.
But the Sabres do get a Dahlin. And I think that player. And I think that as a whole the team underperformed.
Yeah.
To what even what the roster was on paper.
They underperformed, and the lack of depth really, really showed.
Yeah. I mean, yes, a team that had Scott Wilson on their first line is, of course, not going to be good. But did they play even worse than what they should have? Yes.
Yeah.
Even with the lack of depth. I still think and that
that's
they
a,
just...
And, but even, and then despite all that, that's why we go...
Kyle Poso had to recover from an incident that put him in the ICU for
a couple months.
Yeah.
Like a while.
And he wasn't able to get back to his normal training regimen.
He couldn't get on the ice until August.
Yeah. He couldn't get a normal training regimen.
Yeah.
So.
And people want to trade him now because he was bad last year.
Again, he was put in the ICU.
Yeah.
You tell me how well you do at your job immediately coming out of the ICU. And I don't care what you do as your job. You're still coming out of the ICU.
I retweeted.
Yes, I remember. I saw that yesterday.
Yeah.
Look, trading Kyle Poso does nothing for you right now other than make you worse.
It's
because
true.
The guy's fine. He's it's good. True. He's a solid player.
Yeah.
And he still put up his career average in his first year.
Yeah. He did.
I think that Kyle Poso is going to be just fine.
I do too.
And now, and because of the fact that he even knew, he said it in an honest way too.
Yeah.
He said, I couldn't get myself a normal training regimen. I wasn't able to do what I normally do. And it took me a couple months to really get everything going again. And of course, because you use those couple months right now. Kyle Poso is probably training right now.
Oh, for next season. And when he finally started to get it going again. He looked really good.
Yeah, he looked like the Kyle Poso that you signed.
Yeah.
So, of course. All right. Frank, we're 9 days away from the NHL draft.
Dahlin.
We're going to focus our efforts to get either a Chris Baker or a Brayton Wilson in for one of these next two podcasts.
Yeah.
And that's not just for us, but that's for you, the listener. Thank you for always listening to the Leftovers Podcast. I'm Derek Kramer.
I'm Frank R. Curry.
And hey, just ramp it up for that Dahlin, baby.
Dahlin hype.
It's lit.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.